Good Friday afternoon. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, January 10th, 2020. Ahead this afternoon, Becca Martin Brown, the features editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, is back with us after a holiday break. And she has her list, well, half of it anyway, of the top 10 biggest art stories in our region for 2019. She'll bring us the first five today and finish the list when she's with us Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks at Large. Later this afternoon on Science Friday, climate change is fanning the flames of Australia's brush fires, an unprecedented outbreak for the continent. Why fire is part of a warming world and how Australia is responding. That story and more on Science Friday today at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. And if you'd like to see a schedule of all the programs we offer, you can go to KUAF.com. The 10th annual fundraiser for Snack Packs for Kids is tomorrow at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Rogers from 4:30 to 7:30. A variety of soups for dining in or out will be available at the Parish Hall at 824 West Oak. This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Michael Tilley from his office in Fort Smith. We're going to review some of the news from the past week. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to figure out how. Yesterday I got up to fix the little snack and the Hogs were up 11 points and I came back and they were down by two.
What does that tell you? Don't go get a snack.
I'm trying to figure out what I did wrong. Yet I'm not going to get a snack anymore.
All right. Let's talk about a change in numbers slightly. The Fort Smith Metro jobless rate in November, the most recent measured month, was 3.4%. That's up 0.1% from November 2018. Does this mean anything for us?
Slight change, you said, from 3.3 to 3.4%. It's still telling the same story, Kyle, unfortunately, is that there's really very little movement in the number of new jobs and the size of the workforce. And we're still down. The metro area is still down over 10,000 jobs from the peak employment of 125,000 back in June 2006. That's when, Whirlpool was really humming. And so that's almost that's an 8.5% drop. And jobs that just, we can't, sometimes that number will get down to like 9,000 or 9,500, but then we can't get any steam on that. But we've talked about that plenty by comparison. So the Fort Smith metro was 3.4%. Northwest Arkansas was 2.2, Central Arkansas was 3%, and the Jonesboro metro was 2.5%. So those are the other, key metro areas around the state. Now, look, 3.4% is still a good number.
Yeah.
That still shows that, you have of your available workforce, that's a good percentage that or a low percentage, I should say, that's unemployed. I do want to point, we often talk about manufacturing kind of being the negative. Let's talk about a positive sector, and it's the education and health services. And, that looks at, obviously the hospitals, but it may also include, or I think it includes the osteopathic college and what the jobs are growing out there. So their job number was 17,500 in November. That sets, unless the number's revised, that sets a new record for the sector. And that sector has added 2,100 jobs. In the decade, in the past 10 years, it's on track, if it keeps this up, it's on track to be, it'll surpass manufacturing sector, and it could, in the decade, next decade, surpass government to be the second largest employment sector in the metro area. The trade, transportation, and utilities is the largest. That'll continue to be the largest, but just interesting, as I was looking through the numbers, to see the pace of growth in that education and health services sector, which if you want a sector to grow, Kyle, that's not bad. Typically, I'm not saying every job in that sector is a good paying job, but typically they have good paying. There are a good number of good paying jobs in that sector.
Well, another set of numbers, and this one would indicate more positive, and that's that the building activity in the Fort Smith region at the end of last year was ahead of 2018, and it really picked up steam as we moved towards the end of 2019, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. The whole year, the numbers, the building permit values in Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren were below 2018, and it looked like it was going to end up short. But during the final month, it really added on. So the region in those three cities had $238.7 million in permit activity. That's up 3% over 2018. It's up 13% over 2017. A couple of the things that really helped push it over the top, these multi-million dollar projects at the Fort Smith Public School Board, or public schools are working on, you know, they passed the millage in 2018. So they broke ground on the $35 million Southside project. They haven't permitted all of that yet. They broke ground on the similar project at Northside. They haven't permitted all of that. They permitted enough of that late in the year to help push those numbers over. So we could also have a good boost through 2020 for the rest of the projects that are on that list. And I still will not be surprised if we don't see some big ticket items coming again, not only just from the osteopathic college, but from some ancillary medical type facilities that will grow up around it in 2020. So the only city that was down was Van Buren. Van Buren was well off their 2018 numbers. They had $27 million in permits last year compared to $37 million in 2018. Greenwood was up, and then Fort Smith, of course, which is the bulk of the number. Fort Smith was up $204 million in 2019 compared to $187 million in 2018. But for those, again, if you're looking for a bright spot, there you go.
All right. There is a part of Fort Chaffee Boulevard that is maybe going to be a planned zoning district. And no, I'm not bringing this up just to increase our ratings. Let's talk about a planned zoning district and what that means.
Yeah, that's
sexy
pretty
stuff.
Glamorous, very sexy topic. Just kind of short and sweet. There were several people that moved into a part of Chaffee Crossing, which is east side of Fort Smith, where, you know, obviously the military base was, who were promised that it would be kind of one of those livable, you know, walk, play area where it would just be conducive to people walking around. It'd just be retail, restaurant, the historic area. It's near the historic area. But then they let in other folks. They let in some construction companies, construction yards, some few other things. And Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority essentially promised two different things to two different sets of people. There have been a lawsuit involved. And I really feel sorry just for some of those people that, you know, Old Fort Brewing Company, there's a furniture store out there, a couple other small, you might call mom and pop stores, who went out there, invested their money on the notion that it was going to be that walkable area. And it's just, it doesn't, you know, that part of the promise so far doesn't look to be holding up. So they've sued. They lost the suit, but I think they've said they're still going to appeal it. But the latest action on that, which is why you're bringing this up, is the Fort Smith Board has approved now an ordinance to make that portion what's called a planned zoning district, which allows for uses that weren't supposed to be allowed under those promises originally made to some of these folks. So, you know, we'll see how this plays in, if this plays into a future lawsuit, or what happens. But let's just hope this doesn't become a trend, you know, because the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority does not need this kind of reputation going forward. You know, they're kind of on the down leg, so to speak, of getting all the property out there sold or spoken for. And let's hope they can end on a note where folks are happy and folks want to be out there, rather than a note on where people are concerned about moving out there based on, you know, if I'm told X, will it stay X? That's why we keep watching it, to see how this affects the closing out of what the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority is supposed to be doing.
Look at it this way. We'll be able to talk about it probably again in 2020.
Yeah, we'll keep all your listeners riveted on this planned zoning district.
Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these items and many others throughout the week at talkbusiness.net. Michael, talk to you next Friday. How's that?
Hey, sounds good. Thanks, Phil.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a film director reclaims the story of her neighborhood, the South Bronx.
When you talk to people who grew up during that time, they say, I remember the smell.
surviving and thriving in the South Bronx, from the devastating fires of the 1970s to gentrification today. Next time on Latino USA.
Latino USA, Sunday afternoon at 3 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism announced this week terms of an agreement to close an industrial swine breeding facility in Newton County have been carried out. The farm was operated by brothers Richard and Philip Campbell and cousin Jason Henson under contract with a global pork producer, JBS USA. The Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission now holds a conservation easement on the property, for which the farmers were compensated $6.2 million, held in escrow since last August. Lead negotiator Jim Andrews is general counsel for State Parks, Heritage, and Tourism.
Shortly before the end of 2019, we were notified that all swine had been removed from the farm, and we would be looking toward closing out the escrow account sometime in early 2020, which in fact we did January 3rd, 2020.
Of the $6.2 million, $3.7 million comes out of state surplus revenue, $1.5 million from the Division of Arkansas Heritage, and another million contributed by the Nature Conservancy. After payment of escrow fees and retirement of all farm debt, totaling nearly $2.4 million, the owners of C&H Hog Farms Incorporated received over $3.8 million. The farmers own title to the land, but its use as a confined animal feeding operation now restricted under the conservation easement. Stacy Hurst is secretary of the Arkansas Department of Parks, Heritage, and Tourism.
There's some small farming activity that can happen. There are various options that the landowners have. And it is their ancestral land, so it was important to them and to the governor that they be able to keep fee title to the land, but the elegant solution was that with the conservation easement, we were able to restrict the use in a way that benefited our purpose, which was to remove the confined animal feeding operation.
Since the farm first opened in 2013, environmentalists, recreationalists, and later the state, which first permitted the hog farm, sought to shut it down due to its proximity to the Buffalo National River.
There had been ongoing litigation between the Department of Environmental Quality and the C&H Hog Farm for 3 to 4 years prior to my involvement in the matter. There was about to be another suit filed in federal court under the Clean Water Act. So this represents a settlement.
Andrews says all the suits were dismissed with prejudice January 3rd, with the state receiving the conservation easement. Under the settlement agreement, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, not the farmers, are responsible for the site cleanup and closure of two sewage lagoons. The ponds contain nearly 3 million gallons of swine wastewater, which the farmers periodically pumped into tanker trucks to spray on nearby pastures. A comment period regarding a permanent state moratorium on factory farming in the watershed closes January 22nd.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. The American Constitution gives the executive and judicial branches ways to check and control the power of Congress to make laws. For example, a bill is a proposed law. When Congress passes a bill, the president must sign it before it can become law. The president has the right to refuse to sign a bill. If this happens, the bill cannot become a law unless Congress votes again and passes the bill by a two-thirds majority of both houses. The U.S. Supreme Court can check the power of Congress. The court can declare a law to be in violation of the Constitution and therefore invalid. There are similar ways to check the powers of the president and the U.S. Supreme Court. This system of separation of powers and checks and balances helps ensure that government power is limited. Because constitutional governments are organized in complicated ways, getting things done may take time. Although it might sound strange, this is often considered an advantage. Many people think that these complications make it more likely that when government does finally make a decision, it will have been well thought out. That's all for today's podcast, 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
The theme music for 60 Second Civics provided by Cheryl B. Engelhart. You can find her online at cbemusic.com. The song featured on the show is Complacent, which you can find on Apple Music along with all of her music. The number 21 Arkansas women's basketball team returns home this weekend after two straight games on the road. Last night, Arkansas lost to number 4 South Carolina 91-82. Up next, Missouri at Bud Walton Arena Sunday afternoon at 2. Both John Brown University basketball teams won at home by double digits last night over Central Christian. Both teams travel to Langston University tomorrow. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith men are now 6-8 after losing at home to Dallas Baptist last night. The UAFS women are an even 7-7 after their home win last night against Texas Women's. Both UAFS teams host Tarleton tomorrow afternoon in the Stubblefield Center.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support comes from Archon Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design, promotional items, and a variety of business services. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Archon has been locally owned and operated for over 30 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711 for more. Community Creative Center winter classes begin January 26th with adult and family pottery, drawing, painting, glass fusing, fiber art, and Super Saturday workshops. Registration and scholarship information at communitycreativecenter.org.
Last September, President Trump ordered states and local jurisdictions to formally declare if they plan to resettle refugees fleeing war or persecution. In late December, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson opted in. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
In a formal letter to U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo dated December 23rd, Governor Asa Hutchinson stated that Arkansas has a long history of welcoming refugees, that refugees and legal immigrants bring, quote, energy, a thirst for freedom, and a desire to pursue the American dream. He also wrote that because cities, faith-based groups, and nonprofits in Arkansas are providing coordinated response to refugee resettlement, he consents to Arkansas accepting refugees in fiscal year 2020. Emily Crane Lynn is executive director of Canopy of Northwest Arkansas, founded in 2016.
Well, we were incredibly excited. I mean, we've had a positive working relationship with the state.
The United Nations Refugee Agency works with 9 U.S. religious and secular resettlement agencies that partner and fund federally sanctioned community resettlement nonprofits like Canopy to find permanent new homes for individuals fleeing political, religious, or civil persecution.
We receive very minimal support that we're able to pass on to our clients for a period of 90 to 180 days, so 3 to 6 months. That's it. That's the amount of time that they're receiving special resettlement support. That's all. At that point, once that's done, they have to support themselves the way that anybody else does through employment.
Crane Lynn says letters of support were furnished to Governor Hutchinson by the city of Springdale and Fayetteville, as well as local churches, schools, and chambers of commerce. She says participating refugee resettlement nonprofits like Canopy have always been required to submit annual proposals every summer to the U.S. State Department for approval, but Trump's executive order issued last September has delayed that process.
And so that deadline is now, I think it's January 21st, middle of January, and so they need to be able to know where they can place refugees.
In 1979, a few years after U.S. refugee resettlement was deployed in the U.S., nearly a quarter of a million were accommodated. Under the Trump administration, that number has dwindled by executive order to less than 18,000. More than 2.6 million refugees languish in processing centers and camps around the globe. Canopy was approved and able to resettle 54 individuals last year.
Mm-hmm. In fiscal year 19, and 57 in fiscal year 18, and 55 in fiscal year 17. So about, we're averaging right around 54, 55 every year. So yeah, it does look like this year will probably be less than that, but it's really hard to say. There are some years where we start out really slow and then we get a lot in the summer.
From dozens of countries.
The majority of our clients have come from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where there's been a conflict now for more than 2 decades. And we've also resettled several from Central America, from El Salvador and Honduras. And then there's a sprinkling of other countries from all around the world, from Ukraine to Burma, Afghanistan, Cameroon, Rwanda, Colombia, a couple families from Iraq, a family from Afghanistan.
Canopy and partner Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service work closely with the Department of Homeland Security and Office of Refugee Resettlement that operates within the U.S. Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families. Nonprofits like Canopy receive federal resources to financially support and medically assist refugees. Crane Lynn says the government chooses which refugees to resettle in Arkansas.
So yeah, it's really important right now for people to understand the work that we're doing is in partnership with the U.S. government. So our State Department, our Immigration Service, our FBI, National Security Agency, Counterterrorism Center, all these different agencies that we trust to keep us safe every day, these are the same agencies that are handpicking the people who come to our community.
The screening may take up to 2 years or longer. Crane Lynn coordinates support with local churches who deploy mentor teams, employers looking to hire refugees, local schools and literacy centers willing to educate them, as well as with local law enforcement.
Who are involved in making sure that our clients understand U.S. laws and can, you know, can keep themselves and their families safe here. We've had local public health officials who are involved with making sure that, you know, our clients receive great medical care that they haven't been able to get for all these decades while they've been waiting in camps. So really, it does take incredible buy-in from our community, and we couldn't do that if our community was not on board.
And once established, resettled refugees are allowed to relocate to anywhere in the U.S.
We don't have, you know, hard borders between our states, and we do have constitutionally protected freedom of movement, so anybody can go anywhere they like as soon as they get here.
To date, Canopy has resettled 171 refugees, and most have chosen to remain in Arkansas.
We thought that maybe some of our refugee families would choose to eventually migrate towards, you know, these places that have bigger populations of, you know, from their countries of origin. But almost all of them have chosen to stay here. And when we've asked them about that, they've said it's because of the community.
So this year, Canopy is launching its Long Welcome Plan,
which is a 3-year plan to roll out a series of programs that can better serve our clients who've been here for a longer period of time. And we just got a federal grant to allow us to start that work. And so we'll be enrolling our first cases in our integration services this month. And we'll be able to offer extended case management support. So that's just one thing that our clients asked for, was just having a point person that you can go to with all of these questions. Things like, you know, just knowing how to navigate wanting to buy a house, for example, or wanting to start a business, or wanting to send their kids to college, or wanting to, you know, get a degree themselves.
A key component of the Long Welcome Plan is assisting offspring of resettled refugees to thrive in schools and careers. And an additional pilot program will support refugee entrepreneurs
who keep knocking on our door with business ideas, and they're just so eager to pursue them. And so we don't fully know what it's going to look like yet, but we've dedicated some staff time to better supporting our budding entrepreneur base.
Canopy welcomes contributions and volunteers to assist in their mission to resettle displaced refugees in new homes in Arkansas. Details can be found on Facebook and at canopynwa.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Friday, January 10th, 2020.
Hi, let me introduce myself. I'm Becca Martin Brown.
And you are the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. It's been a few weeks.
It has been a while. We still recognized each other.
Yep. Holidays and scheduling and
sick. And yeah. I came home from Thanksgiving in Austin with the grandbaby with some kind of plague.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I had it until after Christmas.
But you don't have it now.
I am plague-free now.
All right.
And we have all sorts of fun stuff to talk about. You know, at the end of every year, we do what we think are the top 10 stories in the arts.
Yeah.
Well, we've quit trying to number them. We number them, but only as placeholders. But we did that over the vacation while y'all were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And
no,
we should
were
talk
here.
About
we
well,
were
you
here.
Were, yeah. Some people
right.
were gone.
Right.
I was there, you were here, right. But now here we are. So here's the here's 10 through 6.
Okay.
And we'll do 5 through 1 on Sunday.
Sounds like a deal.
Number 10 is Silver Dollar City.
And they're celebrating their 60th anniversary this year.
They are fixing to celebrate their anniversary. Plus, they've also, they got named, their old-time Christmas celebration got named Best Theme Park Holiday Event in USA Today.
Right.
For the fourth year out of the last five. They were very excited about that. And they announced that they're going to do this $23 million addition to the park in 2020, mm-hmm. which is the new Mystic River Falls water ride and the new Rivertown area that's going to have a real sit-down restaurant, which I endorse. And I got to taste some of the food, and I endorse it, too.
Okay.
And then they're going to have the 60th anniversary, which they're calling Diamond Jubilee, and I don't think that's 60, but...
I think that's 75, isn't it?
Well, whatever.
Oh, okay.
But they were founded on May 1st, 1960. And I look forward to a lot of stories about the old days because I remember when you could drive through the downtown.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And you got a little paper card that you got to ride the ride so many times. And
right.
They
punched it.
Punched it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be fun in 2020. Number 9 is Terra Studios saying farewell to the Bluebirds.
And we now know the actual date. The final date that they'll be creating those Bluebirds.
And that is?
January 19th, I believe.
I hate that, but they have a good point. You can't turn off the glass furnaces. So it's not like you can make
switch.
A batch and then you can turn them off because it doesn't work that way.
Right.
So they're hoping to figure out some way where they won't take up such a carbon footprint. And I think we should all collect them in flea markets now mm-hmm. and bring them to people who don't have Bluebirds. Number 8 is small museums have big impact. And of course, Crystal Bridges is still pushing the boundaries in American art. The Rogers Historical Museum has its brand shiny new home. And the Shiloh Museum just did the whole remodel
right.
of its galleries. But then there's things like the Museum of Native American History, which has been there for 12 years, but people are just now discovering it.
They have year-round programming with storytelling and symposiums and all sorts of things.
And they had this big cultural thing in 2019 that their director, Charlotte Buchanan Yale, says was the moment when she believes they became a cultural center. Mm. And we're going to talk more about her this Sunday in What's Up because we're talking about the 10 people to watch in 2020.
Sounds good.
There's also Historic Cane Hill.
Right, right. They've been putting together quite...
Now they've got an art gallery and a museum,
right.
and I forget, 16 buildings on the National Register of Historic Places. It used to be they had a harvest festival
exactly.
once a year, and
exactly.
we mentioned them then. So if you've never been to Cane Hill, it's out by Prairie Grove. They've got all this cool stuff. And they were the site of, help me get this right, the first... institution of higher education in Arkansas?
I think that's right. Certainly in Northwest Arkansas, if not Arkansas.
So there, the Cane Hill College was a big deal,
yeah.
even before Miss Sawyer Seminary was
yes.
a big deal. So go out there. And then there's Vintage Bentonville, and you don't have to go anywhere.
Vintage Bentonville.
It's in your computer.
Oh!
They started out with some Facebook pages. And people started sending them photos of old Bentonville.
Mm-hmm.
And so it grew up into an online museum. And eventually they hope they have a brick and mortar footprint where they can show off some of the things that have been donated. But in the meantime, you can go on this website. You can see all these old photos. And Randy McCrory, who's one of the founders of it, says he finds that a lot of people go to vintagebentonville.com at hours when museums aren't open.
Well, there you go. You can do it in your pajamas.
There you go. Number 7, musical roots bear fruit. Sort of a weird combination that we thought both needed to be in here. Ed Stilley,
mm-hmm.
amazing man who I don't know ever played a note of music, but created all those amazing instruments out of found objects.
Bed springs. Lawnmower blades,
the
saw blades.
Metal pan lids.
Yeah.
You know,
And none looked the same.
And it just happened that Kelly and Donna Mulholland found him, met him, found out he made these instruments, which were never signed. All they said was true faith, true light on them. wrote a book that was published by University of Arkansas Press. This makes the 2019 list because, unfortunately, just after an event at the Shiloh Museum, he passed away.
Right.
So his instruments are still on show at the Shiloh for another few days.
That's correct.
And they are super cool and well worth seeing and make really interesting music. And then there's the Cate Brothers.
Wonderful, wonderful, legendary Cate Brothers.
So they are celebrating, although it's been longer than that, 50 years of making music together. And come February 19th, Ben Mead's biopic about them.
Yes.
Which is titled The Cate Brothers Arkansas Rock and Soul Royalty will premiere at 7 o'clock at George's.
That's right.
And number six is Eureka Springs enjoying a renaissance in the arts.
Tell me about this.
They've had a good year. The City Auditorium, which they insist on calling the Odd, which
right.
is funny.
Perfect.
Is
actually.
Perfect.
Yes.
It has been around since 1929. And back in the good old days, they had people like John Philip Sousa.
He opened it, didn't he?
Yes. And Willie Nelson and B.B. King and Ray Charles and Arlo Guthrie. And then there was a period of time when not much happened.
Not much at all.
Well, they're back. There's a guy named Larry Schaefer, who owned Kane's Ballroom in Tulsa,
mm-hmm.
who is now promoting for the Odd. And he's had the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
He's going to have
Old Crow Medicine Show.
But coming up is the Western Swing Band out of Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
Asleep at the Wheel.
Yes.
They're coming, I think, either in February or March.
I think it's March.
I'll check that.
I think
that.
It's early March. And they've already got Charlie Daniels booked for 2020. So the auditorium is kind of coming back, and it's a cool space. And then there's the Writer's Colony,
oh, yeah.
which is 20 years old, and they're redoing mm-hmm. all of their cabins where the writers stay. I wonder if I can say that. They're naming the last two. And I know who they're naming them for, but I better find out if I can
okay.
say that before I
Don't
do it.
Don't spoil anything.
But they're starting to have more workshops and more community collaborations and that sort of thing. And then there's the Eureka Springs School of the Arts, which has now or will be adding residences so they can have resident artists.
Yes.
So Eureka is once again reinventing itself.
As it has done several times over the past several decades. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is Ozarks at Large. The Ozark Mountain Music Festival returns to the Basin Park Hotel in Eureka Springs next week. The four-day festival features performances by a dozen bands, including The Damn Neighbors. Late last year, John Henry, Brennan Johnson, and Jennifer Parker came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about their music and play a couple of original songs, including this one.
Hello, we're The Damn Neighbors. This one's called Danger in My Moonshine. One, two, three.
The grass-fed boys had just played their set. We were spinning tales about life and death. Passing round a jar of that white hot light. Never forget what Cameron said. He said, I like a little danger in my moonshine. I like a little reckless abandon in my life. And I would like to wager we'll be howling all night. And I like a little danger. I like a little danger. need a little reckless abandon in my life. And I would like to wager we'll be howling all night. And I like a little danger in my moonshine. In my moonshine. Like a little danger in my moonshine. I need a little reckless abandon in my life. And I would like to wager we'll be howling all night. And I like a little danger.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I am in the Furman Garner Performance Studio with the Dam Neighbors. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Yes. First time is this configuration. You guys have been in here separately for other projects. John, tell us a little bit about this new band.
So it's called the Dam Neighbors. Brennan kind of came up with that name. Brennan came up with the name Them Neighbors, I think.
Yeah, it was either going to be the Neighbors or Them Neighbors or something, because he and I are neighbors. And then it was a drunk guy in a bar or something, or I don't know.
Yeah, it was exactly that.
I assume he's drunk, but
generally is.
He asked us what our brand name was, and we told him that, and he misheard us and said, "The Damn Neighbors, hey, that's cool." And I was like, "Sweet, thanks, stranger."
Yeah, basically. And that
keeping
was it.
That.
Yeah, and that was it. When we named it that, we tried a few other things, but they just weren't as good.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't as good. When we were in that phase of like, what's our name going to be? You got to choose a catchy name, you know, and it was like, well, that was the name that kept being like, oh, that's good. Like, what? That's awesome. And then we started telling that to people and they were like, that's awesome. That's a great name. So
it is a great name.
Yeah. So that was it. But we got together because me and Brennan had been in. We're in the Squashers. That's what we've been in here talking to you, I'm sure, before.
Uh-huh.
And Brennan plays mandolin. He played drums in that band. But he plays mandolin as well. And we were having trouble really just hammering down a bass. Ryan lived in St. Louis. He was playing bass for us at the time. It was really getting difficult to...
I wasn't able to really, practicing with the drums. Most of the time I was just playing on pillows in my apartment. So.
Oh,
I was kind of getting sick of that.
Yeah. But he's getting pretty good at mandolin, so he wanted to be
some strings.
You're
now a mandolin player.
Yeah, basically. I don't think
congratulations.
He didn't even have his drums.
I can just, grab it and walk in a building, and it's all there, you know? I don't have to take six trips.
That's been
really
the biggest.
Jealous.
That is the biggest difference that I've noticed, as far as just travel and unloading, is that it's all of a sudden we're loaded in.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, five more trips to make, because there's not, five or six piece drums and then a bunch of cymbals and a huge heavy equipment bag that comes along with that. And that takes up as much room in a vehicle as my rig and his rig.
Oh man.
Now. Probably.
Wait, it takes up more than that.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was crazy. So
probably all of our gear would be just
the
drums.
Pretty much. It's nuts. So that's been really fun. I mean, just as a non-musical aspect of it.
Sure. So how did you guys find Jennifer?
I'd seen Jennifer play. We both had with Candy, Lee, and that's specifically who I remember. I think I'd seen you with another group or two.
Yeah, I played with Brooke Fields for a while.
I think I'd seen you with them.
I used to play electric bass mostly.
Uh-huh.
And so I've only more recently in the last few years started playing upright and focusing more on, you know, like the folksy string side of things and Americana and folk and stuff like that. Bluegrass.
Yeah, bluegrass.
And so, yeah, it's been a fun adventure.
Fair to say the Damn Neighbors are bluegrass?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. I guess the songs that we played today were not particularly bluegrass. Those are kind of more different kinds of folk. And Danger in My Moonshine is a little bit more, I don't know, gypsy folk sort of thing. But
yeah,
a lot
of
what we do.
Thematically, though, yeah. It's very mountainy. That's kind of strange. It's like a different style of music talking, you know.
Which we seem to do a lot.
The Ozarks and moonshine.
Yeah, it does seem that we do that a lot, where a lot of what we do is straight bluegrass, but the stuff that's not straight bluegrass is thematic, I guess. It fits. It's not like it's just out of the dark.
Yeah, I feel like most of our originals are less bluegrass, and then we did bluegrass covers.
Uh-huh.
So.
And then we have a few originals that are straight bluegrass. Yeah. It's kind of all across the board, but we do stick in a, I don't know, somewhere someone's going to make a graph. The point that we begin and the point that we end.
Right.
You ain't bluegrass.
I mean, I feel
seems like we all bring our own influences from lots of different types of music that we love to, you know, the instruments that we play, so we can kind of do new things with them.
Sure.
In a way.
Yeah, I think so. I'm a huge Doc Watson fan. Mm-hmm. He was a huge influence on me, and so. Some of what he did was pretty bluegrassy, but some of what he did was super on the like really softer folk end, and then some of it was he was just kind of all over the board. He did some like jazzy, almost jazzy stuff, not quite jazz, but you know, New Orleans blues, I guess, is kind of. So he was just everywhere, and that was a huge influence on me. So I think a lot of that, my songwriting ends up going across those types of things. Still string music, it's still very definitively in a string genre, but not necessarily bluegrass.
Because
Bill Monroe would shoot us all if he was right now in this studio.
Well, I like what you said about mountainy. I feel like that should be a genre. Because if you say mountain music, I know what you mean.
It is, especially in this area. Uh-huh. And up in Missouri, it seems like in the Ozark region, it's a really wide kind of thing. I mean, because music is so organic and alive, and it evolves and does different things. And, you know, just like the way it's developed in this region is particularly interesting to me.
As you've been writing songs for this new band, have you collected enough for an album yet? I know that's always kind of the first.
We have enough for at least one. We probably have to have
a few of them.
Oh, goody.
Yeah.
Did you know, Jennifer?
I guess I didn't. I do not write the songs. Uh-huh. These two write the songs, and I think they're really particularly good songwriters. And
isn't it nice to be able to just jump in and play?
Yeah, it sure is.
She just really helps sing with them. Up our harmony game by like tenfold.
Oh,
that's a huge thing that Jennifer helps with. And because, you know, writing a song, sometimes I'll have an idea for the melody and a rough idea for how the whole thing goes, but it's tough to know, to really hear what could happen with it until you get together with people and start to go through it together and just hear what they can put on it. I think a lot of people end up with this very specific thing, and in my head, if I have something real specific, I'll try to achieve that, but I think that generally First, I want to hear input. I'm huge input oriented. Like, I want to hear what other people have to give to a song. So, it's because, like Jennifer was saying about how we all have different influences. We all have different influences, and those won't be allowed to come through if someone has maybe too specific of an idea and directs it too specifically. And I think if you let other people do their thing, then you end up with this, like, really more organic and interesting product, then, you know, you end up with something that came more from the actual group than something that's, here's exactly how this goes.
Yeah, how you heard it in your head.
Yeah, and sometimes the way I heard it in my head is not the way that it sounds really the best way, you know. That's just not, I don't think anyone could ever say that, and if they did, they'd be lying. And so having that input
is important.
Except
for Mozart, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not even him. He probably had some, He probably had some songs.
That's what he was known for, I think.
Oh, he's just perfect every time?
Yeah, well, he heard the entire finished piece of music in his head. And then he just wrote it out feverishly on the page.
Probably literally feverishly.
So for now, live shows?
Yeah, we've been playing a lot of live shows. What we're really excited to do coming up is in January, one of my favorite things in the winter to do, and it's probably because it's halfway through the winter and everyone's ready, got cabin fever, is Ozark Mountain Music Festival. The festival takes place January 16 through 19, and we play that Saturday afternoon there during the festival, and there's a lot of great bands playing that. I think Arkansas is headlining.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
really, that's exciting.
Awesome.
Love those guys. And so we'll be out there, and I'm really excited for that. That's what I'm mucho excited for, just because I get to be there all weekend, and that's a really fun festival. So.
What's so fun about that festival? That's one around here that I'm ashamed to say I've not made it to.
There's ghosts. And
there's ghosts.
it's Eureka Springs, so there's ghosts.
I'm waiting
everywhere.
To see a ghost. Hopefully this year.
I'm a skeptic, man. I think if I'm this way. I want to see one of these ghosts that they're always talking about in Eureka Springs, but
I've always wanted to see the ghosts.
I want to see one of these ghosts because I won't believe it until I see it. I'm so much a skeptic, though, that I think that maybe I have, and I was just like, no, that was just the wind and the lighting. You know, there's no way that was a ghost.
That festival's cool, though, because it kind of feels like a big sleepover. Like, everybody's in the hotel, you know, for the most part, so it's kind of just kind of like a big sleepover with a bunch of goofballs.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. It is. I don't think I could say it any better than that.
Thank you guys so much for coming in, and I hope your 2020 gets off to a good start.
Thank you, Antoine.
Thanks so much for having us.
That was John Henry, Brennan Johnson, and Jennifer Parker, who together are the Damn Neighbors. They recently spoke with and performed for Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. The trio will perform at 4 p.m. January 18th at the Basin Park Hotel as part of the Ozark Mountain Music Festival. Tickets and a full lineup can be found at OzarkMountainMusicFestival.com. Visit TheDamnNeighbors.com for more information about the trio who played one more original song for us during their recent trip to our studio.
Hey, this is Brennan Johnson from The Damn Neighbors, and this song is called Writing Pen. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Just accept that my pen wandered right off the page. Now write on whatever it takes. never sat alone, wearing only a stare, just listening to some old country song. Now I thought about nothing much at all, other than why I had nothing to say. Sometimes pain creates a light that burns forever away deep down inside. I'll accept that my pen wandered right off the page. I'll write on whatever it takes. Yeah, I'll accept that my pen wandered right off the page, right on whatever it takes.
The Damn Neighbors in the Furman Garner Performance Studio late last year, talking with and playing for Antoinette Grajeda. They will be at the Ozark Mountain Music Festival in Eureka Springs next week. This is Ozarks at Large.
Walton Arts Center presents Canadian guitarist Jesse Cook January 10th at 8 p.m. Known for his fusion of world music, this flamenco guitar master and his band will make their debut performance in Northwest Arkansas. WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets. Little Wing Productions presents country-based rock artist Asleep at the Wheel and special guest Red Dirt Rangers to the Auditorium in Eureka Springs March 7th. A limited number of reserve tickets now available at 888-695-0888 or online at theauditorium.org.
Monday, on the next daily edition of Ozarks at Large, the Woody Guthrie Center in Tulsa celebrates music in honor of its namesake. And this month, it's also celebrating a favorite pastime of Woody Guthrie, baseball.
It's really an exhibit that helps explain various elements of Americana. Woody Guthrie was a baseball fan, and that alone isn't reason enough to bring the exhibit to the Woody Guthrie Center. But as it expands its reach, meaning the center expands its reach, looking for things that tell a broader story of American culture, baseball and music, two things that Woody Guthrie was passionate about.
Woody Guthrie, baseball, music, and more on Monday's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
That's Grace Kelly and Phil Woods in the background. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday here on KUAF. We'll hear more from Grace. We'll also hear from Dr. Lonnie Smith, guitarist Jack Wilson, saxophonist Stan Getz, and much more. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Gravett. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this edition of our show included Jacqueline Froelich, who also provided news and sound about the closing of the hog farm near the Buffalo River, and Antoinette Grajeda. Our thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics and Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette for their help. Becca will return with us Sunday morning at 9 when we have Weekend Ozarks at Large on 91.3 KUAF. And as I just mentioned, we'll start another week of new daily programs Monday at noon and 7 p.m. If you can't listen to us at noon or 7, don't forget we offer a free podcast version of our program. It's available at Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, many other places where you can find podcasts. It's absolutely free. You can also listen to past shows and individual stories and interviews at ozarksatlarge.com. Thanks for your time. Remember, temperatures drop this weekend, so please stay warm. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you for spending part of your Friday with us. Have a great rest of your Friday.